This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 259. CJ and I are going to catch up on a bunch of news in the cloud, recorded live June the 7th, 2018. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc.
Hey, hey, CJ.
Who are you, stranger?
My God, doesn't it feel like that?
Oh, sorry, bumped the mic.
We haven't done this for a while.
No joke. It certainly does feel that way, doesn't it?
Man, May was an absolute the funny thing is, we've pushed out a ton of episodes in May from all the interviews you did at the Build conference, from the interviews and the live shows that you and I did at the SharePoint conference. But it feels like we haven't sat down to do a show together in...
Gosh, a month?
It feels like that.
I guess, which wasn't that long ago, but those were kind of a bit different, right? Not like this anyway.
Yeah, not the stuff that's where we know exactly what we're going to talk about leading into it.
Yeah, it was... I can't even remember May. It was such a blur. It was a blur of activity, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's been quite busy. I know, I mean, we're going to get to it in just a second here. Well, I guess we'll get to it now. I mean, the biggest thing in the news right now is a massive acquisition, right?
Yeah, GitHub.
No, Hyperfish.
Well, yeah, that too, for sure.
So this is interesting because it was all, I mean, you guys got acquired by a public company. And well, you know what? Why don't you tell us a little bit about it, tell our listeners about it. I'm sure they saw it. Some of them probably are aware of it on Twitter, but we've been waiting for having a chance to talk to you about this.
Yeah. So I guess for technicality reasons, we haven't been acquired yet.
Oh.
But by the time this episode comes out, it may have closed. So it was announced that we're being acquired. How about that? But then typically there's an announcement and then there's a period of time as a whole bunch of stuff gets done and there's a bunch of conditions that need to be met and there's a bunch of legal documents that have to be completed and then there's a closing, you know, a closing time. And so as of recording this, we haven't closed yet, but we're very close. So I fully expect it to go ahead, but sort of disclaimers that, you know, the proverbial can still hit the fan.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. Yeah, a lot of stuff. It's like buying a house, right? You have the whole process where you put a contract on it and then you got to go through all this stuff, but you don't end up paying for it until the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have a closing date, right? So yeah, we're working towards that, but you know, I fully expect it to close. And so yeah, it was a big deal for us, like really big deal for us. It's a real milestone in the company's life, right? We started the company over 2 years ago now, and like any company in its life cycle, whenever an opportunity comes up as a founder, you usually look at it and you go, would this be a good thing for the company or not? You kind of evaluate things, and sometimes there's a flurry of those and sometimes there's not. And this opportunity came up and we really looked hard at it about where we wanted to take the company and where LiveTiles were also going in their vision and their journey as a company. And we felt like the opportunity was really good and solid for us and was definitely a better together story for sure. So we opted to dive down this rabbit hole and it has been eye-opening. You know, it's fascinating. I've never really been this close as part of the process before. I've worked for a company that's been acquired before and been at arm's length before, but not like at the coalface with it. And it's been an absolutely fascinating process. But we're really stoked. We're really pleased with the outcome. The LiveTiles team are such awesome people and we really get on really well with them. We share a lot of commonalities with them in terms of culture for the company. Was really like when Brian and I sat down and started Hyperfish, the first thing we talked about was the culture we wanted to build, not what the ones and zeros were going to be. And we felt like we went and visited with LiveTiles really early on in the process to meet with them and get a feel for what sort of people they are. And they share such a common culture with us that it's a really natural fit from that perspective, which is super important to us because when one company gets bought by another and inevitably the companies come together, obviously, sometimes it doesn't work out very well. And usually that's because of culture mismatch more than anything else. So that was the most important thing to us, obviously. And then obviously super important as well is where they're going in the long run and what their vision is and their roadmap and what they're doing with their company and their product and things. So they're a public company listed in Australia, and they build products in the SharePoint and Office 365 space predominantly, mostly around intelligent workplace stuff. So things like intelligent canvases for surfacing content from other systems, for building intranets, and they have a bot building product for building intelligent bots in your environment, in your business. Those are obviously the things that they've published today. But we talked a lot about roadmap and vision for the long term as well. So we feel like a match was really good there.
It's been really interesting to watch the process, you know, in the last couple of weeks, and just seeing like the stuff that you were going through and the stress that you were going through, and watching the stress during the show. So I know I could tell that you were distracted at some times, or not distracted, but you were definitely, your focus was in areas that were hard to disconnect from.
Yes, definitely. It's been a really interesting process for me personally, because, you know, this is my baby. Mm-hmm. And it's, I imagine, I don't have teenagers yet or kids that are about to leave home, but I get a suspicion or a sneaking sensation that it must be similar to kind of like a kid leaving the nest in some ways. And I've just been on this emotional roller coaster. Like, it's been a very odd process. Like, I've been waking up in the middle of the night with like super itchy feet. Like, that's my telltale sign of like, I'm thinking too hard about stuff. If I wake up and my feet start moving and I can't get back to sleep and things like that. So yeah, it's been a lot of thinking and a lot of emotion like that. So yeah, it's been a hell of a roller coaster. But yeah, really interesting. I've definitely grown as a person professionally from it as well, going through this, I guess. And yeah, it's definitely been distracting, that's for sure. Hey, and you're kind of close to this as well. You played a key role in this deal. For those of you who are wondering, like, what the hell has AC got to do with this? We signed the announcement, or we signed the sale and purchase agreement, which is what was required for the announcement, while we were still in Vegas, on the last day we were in Vegas at SharePoint conference. And these are kind of tricky deals, especially with a publicly listed company, because it's super important that it doesn't leak. And because insider trading and things like that's bad. And so we were very careful about who we could talk to about this. But we really needed somebody to witness our signatures on the contract. it was the last day of SharePoint conference, or it was at the end of SharePoint. It was after SharePoint conference, I think.
It was the day after.
The day after. And we were kind of like, oh man, we need somebody who we can trust to be able to talk to about this and sign the docs and all this sort of stuff. And I was like, I'm pretty sure AC is still here. Let me call him. So I called you up, and I think you're either in bed or you're just jumping through the shower or something like that. And it's like, dude, I need you. I need you to sign something.
Yeah, I ran downstairs to get a coffee. I never managed to get off of East Coast time in Vegas that week. So I was always up at like 4 or 5 in the morning, and I went downstairs to go get a coffee, and that day I'd forgot my phone in the room. I come back to my room and I've got like 2 or 3 texts from you, which is the, you know, hey, but I need a favor, or a couple things. And then I was like, what's up? And you're like, on the phone. I'm like, oh shit, this isn't good.
So yeah.
Maybe it is good, maybe it's not good. It's like, yeah, what can I do? What can I do?
But so, anyway, yes, it was nice to have you as part of that.
I'm glad I could help out. Hey, I have a few questions for you about it. And I don't know if there's stuff that, there may be things, you and I haven't talked about this ahead of time, and I know the answers to these, but
can my safe word be pineapple?
There you go. Yeah, oh man, you don't really, I don't think, can we change it to do something different? Because there, you want to change the word.
Okay.
That actually means something.
Okay.
What about, well, yeah, pick your word first.
Oh gosh.
You know what, it can be pineapple, but here's what it means. In a neighborhood near where I live, it is a way to signify that you're up for the swinging community, the swingers community, if you put a flag of a pineapple in your front yard.
Oh, really? Over here, it's white rocks in your front yard, painted white rocks.
I hear about that it's like that in the desert too. I was like, oh man, you do that in Phoenix, it's like everybody's a swinger.
Everybody's got, maybe they are. Hey, go Phoenix. okay, so not pineapples. What about sea cucumbers?
There you go. All right. Nice choice.
Hopefully I won't have to use it. Yeah.
All right. So, and these are mostly questions I see other people are going to ask when it comes up. So okay. You guys being acquired, is Hyperfish going away and it's all going to be live tiles?
No, not in the short term. No. So Hyperfish will be Hyperfish for probably at least 12 to 18 months, maybe 2 years. We're not sure, but definitely nothing in the next year.
Yeah,
no change in the next year.
I guess all these questions I should preface with, the immediate term, of course, things change. And as, you know, Hyperfish and Live Tiles gets closer together and there's more conversations and there's more roadmappy stuff that works on, anything can change, right?
So yeah, exactly. We have no plans to do anything like that in the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay. So you guys are in Seattle. I know that they've got a pretty substantial New York City.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, actually they've got offices in New York, Rochester, Ireland, Sligo in Ireland, Hobart in Australia. And then there's sort of smaller satellite offices in a bunch of places. They actually have existing staff in Bellevue. In Seattle, and just near Amazon, actually. And then there's an engineering team in Washington State as well, in the Tri-Cities area. So they have a few different offices already. But yeah, the main one is in New York City.
You guys staying put where you are? Are you moving? Or
we are absolutely staying put. In fact, that was sort of part of this was sort of a more formal presence in Seattle.
Okay. So, and is there... I guess, when you say that you guys aren't like the Hyperfish brand is going away as a company, all the people that we know as Hyperfish, you guys are all still together. I mean, that's all like, that's still, the Hyperfish company is still there and everything.
Absolutely. Yep. We're keeping the exact same office space. Everybody that's here is working on Hyperfish or will continue to work on Hyperfish. We've actually just started hiring a couple more people as well. But as a company, we're all staying together and we're still focused on our core mission around our Hyperfish product.
Yeah. And I mean, people may decide to go somewhere else, but they may have another opportunity or something like that. But that's not, part of the acquisition is not like a staff change, something like that.
No, we're not doing a big reorg and firing a bunch of people or moving a bunch of people around. No.
Awesome. Does it change your plans for what you guys wanted to do for Hyperfish at all in the next, you know, in the foreseeable future? Or does...
No, not in the foreseeable future. There's definitely a vision that we have together of where we want to go that will play out over the next couple of years, I imagine. But from what we build and sell and produce today, that's not changing in the foreseeable future.
So, I mean, from the outside, it sounds like this... Nobody's going to really see a change like that. That people that know Hyperfish, your existing customers, they're not going to see much of a change. You may have like, hey, now that we're part of this family, then there's some opportunity, cross-sell, cross kind of thing. But for the most part, I mean, from the outside person, if they didn't see this acquisition news, it looks like business as usual.
Yeah, definitely. And we absolutely have plans for integration and more better products together and all those kinds of things. And that's all part of the vision of where we want to take the combined company. But from what people know of us today from the outside, that won't change for the next, you know, at least 12 months. But yeah, in time, we'll be working on integrations and new products together for sure.
Awesome. Yep. Well, all right. We won't dig too much on this, but I mean, that was congratulations. Very happy for you. It's been fun to watch from like an arm's length. I've been involved in a couple of these, kind of like you've never like what you're going through now, but I guess from the work for a company that was acquired and work.
I'm surprised you didn't ask if I'm going to stay.
Well, I mean, I asked about staff. I assume that. I mean,
everybody's, okay. Quite a few people have asked. They were like, what are you doing next?
Well, like, so.
What do you mean by that? Because I'm sticking around.
because I have asked you that in a way, but I guess for people that see acquisitions, I think that a lot of people that look at an acquisition, if you're not as close to knowing how these things work, they don't really understand kind of how the pieces work. So, I mean, I'm assuming that it's safe to say that the people that have the biggest stake in it, like you and your business partner, Brian, who are like the founders of the company, I assume it's not you guys are required to stick around for at least a minimum amount of time in order to, well, for certain reasons, you guys are incentivized to stick around for a certain amount of time. Every acquisition's like that.
Yeah, usually there's a core set of people, like key people that are required, right? And that's, you know, because you don't want that whole thing to fall apart right after the acquisition, right?
Yeah.
But honestly, the way I think about this is like, I would not have been a proponent for this deal if I didn't think I didn't want to work at this company.
Gotcha.
And I can't imagine supporting it if I felt like this is not somebody I'd want to work with or work for, right? Like that just seems like a cutting your nose off to spite your face kind of thing, at least gotcha. To me. Some people might not feel that way, but that's how I feel about it. And yeah, so absolutely, I'll be with Hyperfish and running the Hyperfish team as part of Live Tiles. Yeah, ongoing.
Cool.
I have no plans to move at this point.
Awesome. Well, it'll be cool to see how this whole thing comes about and changes from it and all that stuff. But congratulations and
very happy
for you and seeing what it... be curious to see, like, you know, there's another guy that you and I both know that started a company not like what you guys do, but he started his own business, kind of built it up, and then they ultimately sold. And he eventually, I guess he was there, the acquisition was 2 years ago, and then he recently just left. And so it's been interesting watching his experience over the last 2 years about, you know, what's it like from being pre-acquisition to being post-acquisition, and how does that change things at the business and stuff. So I'd be curious to hear stuff that you can share and, you know, over the next couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be really interesting. Like it's the first time I've been this close to it. So it's quite a lot of it's new for me too.
Awesome. All right. So a couple of other things we want to dive into before we start diving into the news. Two quick things. You and I didn't get a chance to share our thoughts on the SharePoint conference that we just did back, I guess, was it 2 weeks ago now, that we just did in Las Vegas, because every time we were on the show, we were doing it in front of somebody from Microsoft. So what are your thoughts on the show?
Yeah, So I've got two parts to my answer. The first part is how I felt it went from a content and an attendee perspective, and then how I feel about from a, not behind this, I wasn't really involved in the running of the show at all, other than from a sponsor point of view. So I say from a behind the scenes point of view, but what I really mean by that is like, because we've been to a lot of conferences, you see things that I don't think attendees would see.
Yep.
And so I've kind of got that sort of view on it as well. From an attendee and content point of view, I actually think it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was great having a whole bunch of people that had a commonality, that had common ground. Like SharePoint conference used to be really well known for, right? There's a lot of like-minded people in the same space. You've all got something in common, whether you're a dev or an IT pro or a business person or a user or a designer or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So from that point of view, I think it was really good. I thought the content was really solid. I thought there were a bunch of great sessions. Yeah, I think Microsoft did pretty well on their keynotes and things. So yeah, I think from the attendee perspective, I could imagine they all went back thinking, hey, this is pretty good. Like, you know, yay, there's a space for us now, right? Oh, that's a bad pun, isn't it?
I'll get to that in a minute.
I mean, there's a place for us. How about that? And it was their people. From the kind of the show perspective, I'm really critical of conferences because I've organized a bunch of them, right? And you see things that you would have done differently and stuff. Overall, I thought it was okay, but I just felt like it wasn't up to par for a Microsoft show. And it wasn't a Microsoft show, I guess, but it was a Microsoft show. Mm-hmm. It was kind of this fence-sitting beast that was like, I think people expected it to be a Microsoft show, but it definitely wasn't a tier one like Microsoft show in terms of polish and presentation. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm going to agree with everything you said about it from the public persona of a show. Was the show a success? Yes, I think it was. And I think that from the attendee, I'll be there next year. I think that Microsoft should definitely do it again. And I would definitely recommend it to anybody who's a SharePoint professional, at least if you're a SharePoint professional in North America. I'm looking forward to going to the European version of this, where I'm doing a workshop and a couple breakout sessions in early December in Copenhagen. But yeah, from that perspective, I totally agree with everything you just said. My personal take on it, like you said, which I haven't organized a show, but I've been involved in a lot of shows, from the content selection. I was involved in the content selection for this one, for the dev track. I was, you know, you just attend a lot of shows, you see a lot of the behind the scenes. I'm going to give them a solid, like a B minus maybe. I think that there's a lot of stuff that they could improve on. The thing that you said about at the very end, that's not a negative statement. I mean, it's constructive criticism. I think that communication seems like it could have been better. The marketing of it, I thought the show could have been much, much bigger with a lot more attendees had the marketing of the show been better executed.
Started from day one.
it started from day, from day one, I thought it could have been better. And I think that really because it very much felt like Microsoft was taking a back seat to pushing the show to get it to go. And the third party was doing it. And then in the last month, it's almost like Microsoft really started to double their efforts. But the doubling of the efforts wasn't with normal channels. It was all about trying to get the community to go do the work. And it like a grassroots kind of thing, like they talk about with elections. But to me, the thing that was really missing is that Microsoft leading the charge and saying, this is the place you need to be. Now, I get the fact that there's the complication where the main marketing for Microsoft doesn't want product-specific shows. And this couldn't exactly be the SharePoint team putting on this conference because you've got Build, Ignite, and Inspire.
Yeah, but none of that is the audience's issue, and none of that is the speaker's issue, and none of that is the sponsor's issue. That's a Microsoft problem to deal with.
Exactly, yeah. So there were things like that that I thought that could have been better. I think the way that I look at it and what you said a second ago, which it wasn't a Microsoft show, so it didn't feel like a tier one to me. It didn't have the fit and finish of a Microsoft show.
Oh, definitely not.
The organization piece of it didn't. I didn't like the logistics of having the dining and the expo hall totally separate from where all the sessions were. I thought that was kind of frustrating because, I mean, if I was a vendor, I would have been like, I'm not going to sponsor this because the only time people are going to come over here is when they want to go eat.
Yeah, you say that, right? Like, and I agree to a certain extent. Having said that, from a sponsor's point of view, the show was a really big success for us.
Oh, that's good.
And I think that boils down to, not because of the size of it, because it was a small show, right? Like 2,500. I mean, SharePoint conference dropped from 12, let's be frank, right? It dropped from 12,000 to 2,500, mm-hmm. right? That's a big drop over a few years, right? So from a sponsor's perspective on that side, you could go, well, that's really ridiculous because that's a bunch of less opportunity right there.
Yeah.
However, as far as shows go recently, it was very targeted. It was the right audience, and the quality of people that we spoke to at the show was really high, even though the logistics was a complete shambles. Like on the day, as a sponsor, we got a decent audience out of it, which was great. I think we were pleasantly surprised, let's put it that way.
But from
an organization perspective, yeah, could have been a lot better.
From someone, I thought from an independent or small business person that didn't have an expo there, a booth there, I too found it to be very, very beneficial. So, but
I got to say, when we showed up as a sponsor, when we showed up and we saw all this construction going on between the main thing and this where the sponsor hall was, and the meal and sponsor hall, it was like really? Come on.
Now, for those of you who weren't there, CJ and I, the way we're talking about it, it's occurring to me that it might be sounding like it's a lot worse than it really was.
Yeah.
There was construction that was going on. There was construction that was going on, but it wasn't going on while we were all there at the conference.
No.
And there was like a wooden tunnel that was not narrow. It was a fairly wide tunnel that went from where the expo area was to the building that had all the sessions. And it was maybe like a 30 second to a 60 second walk. So it was not that big of a deal.
No.
But just seeing the fact that it was like, I got to leave the building to go over to the expo and the food, and then I got to leave to go back over here. It was kind of like, not ideal.
But anyway, so there's lots of room for improvement. But I think in summary, like I think from an attendee's perspective, it would be a good show and they got the right content. I think they nailed the speaker lineup for the most part. It was really good. Yeah, I think from an attendee's perspective, I suspect it was worth the money.
Wow, I would agree with that. And a couple hundred people got some free t-shirts from the Microsoft Cloud Show.
They certainly did. We did a new run of shirts and gave them all away, which was awesome.
Very popular. Good. It's a different shirt that we've done in the past, and we will absolutely have more of those in the future. So
yes.
Stay tuned. We actually may be doing maybe doing some more live shows from other conferences coming up this fall.
Yes. We'll give them a more swag.
Yeah. Hey, let's do one more bit here before we start diving into our news, because we got a bunch of news here and we've already been rambling on to our listeners for a bit. Although, to be fair, it's okay if we go a little long today because, I mean, they haven't heard from us that much.
I hope they found it interesting at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, why don't you break the big news for the podcast though?
Yes.
You have a closer tie to this. And anyway, have at it.
Yeah. Well, so we wouldn't be able to do this show without the support of our sponsors. And we're very lucky and very fortunate to have them on board to make this show possible. There are a bunch of costs involved in hosting it and editing it and getting it out and just all the production side of it and things. definitely costs us. So we have a great set of sponsors that we really appreciate. And we have a new sponsor who's just joined. And this one is near and dear to my heart. It's a product that I fundamentally believe in and use every single day. And as a developer and as somebody building a product, this product has helped us. And so this is one where I feel like, hey, I know what they do and all that, but I use it and I rely on it to run a production service. And that's Raygun.com. So if you haven't heard of Raygun, they do performance and crash reporting and keeping an eye on your application running, as well as user experience. So things like the performance that your users are seeing, like real world performance numbers in terms of rendering times and how your application is running in a user's browser, for example, they let you monitor all that stuff. And it is an awesome tool. Like, we have used it at Hyperfish almost from day one, and I absolutely love it. So we're very fortunate to have Raygun joining the show. And I guess without further ado, let's run the first spot.
Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with answers. Get full-stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your code base, think Raygun. Head over to Raygun.com, get up and running within minutes, and dramatically improve your online experiences for your users.
All right, there you go. That's Raygun.
Awesome. Hey, Raygun, thank you very much for sponsoring the show. We really appreciate it. I know we've had you on the show in the past as well. And CJ interviewed the CEO a bit ago. And
yeah, JD. I'm actually catching up for dinner with him tonight. So
awesome.
Completely coincidentally, but yeah.
Give him a big thank you. Give him a big thank you. Actually, take him out to dinner on the podcast. He'll be taking himself out to dinner.
There you go.
Yeah. No, we know. That was a complete joke, okay?
It's to a nice restaurant. We don't want to spend that much. So, but I'll buy him a beer. How about that? I'm thinking. JD, if you're listening to this, thank you very much. We really appreciate the support.
Yeah, I'd absolutely love to. I'm working on some stuff to help support my business, and I would love to dive in and try to integrate this to see how I can play with it as well. So, it'd be nice to be able to, you know, use what your sponsors are doing. So you can speak to that. I know our other sponsors with Nintex and AvePoint, we've used their products quite a bit in the past as well. So
absolutely.
Anyway, thank you very much. All right. How about some news?
That sounds good.
Awesome.
There's been a lot going on.
Oh my God. Our news backlog has been piling up, and there's no way we're going to get through all of this today.
Some of it's not news anymore.
Some of it's not news anymore at all. Some of the stuff I went back and looked at, I'm like going, oh, look, that happened a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
So if you can remember far enough back, remember I did an episode where I interviewed a gentleman from HashiCorp about Terraform and from Microsoft?
Yeah, definitely.
So soon after that, a guy sent me a link to a project that was open sourced. It's called Open Sourcing Terra Test. It's a Swiss Army knife for testing infrastructure code. And essentially what this does, what this tool is, it's called Terra Test. You can get on GitHub. And what it is it's a Go library that makes it easier to write automated tests for your infrastructure's code. So it provides a bunch of help functions and patterns for common infrastructure testing tasks, such as testing Terraform code, Docker images, working with AWS APIs, making HTTP requests, running shell commands, a whole bunch more. You can still do stuff with it, and you can still leverage it to use in Azure, but I just thought that, hey, we talked about Terraform in an interview with them. This is a cool tool that actually goes on, that extends it, or that actually integrates a little bit with it. It would be a good solution for testing your Terraform stuff.
Wow, that sounds really cool. I'm going to look at that.
Yeah, so it'd be like, you guys do a deployment and then you test the stuff that's in your deployment, but this apparently enables you to actually test the deployment itself.
Of the infrastructure.
Yeah, of the infrastructure.
Huh, dang, I'm going to have to check that out. That sounds cool.
Now, you want to go off on a tangent?
You did say GitHub.
We did say GitHub.
So, a Microsoft company.
No, wait. Just like we talked about with Hyperfish, a soon-to-be-expected Microsoft company.
Closing later this year, perhaps.
Yeah.
Pending regulatory approval.
So if you have been under a rock, earlier this week on June the 4th, Microsoft announced their intention to acquire GitHub for $7.5 billion in an all-stock deal. Now,
$1 billion.
Yeah. So let me throw a little bit of the news in this, which I thought there's some stuff in here that is really interesting. And I don't want to say the fallout or the backlash or the response. The response has been really interesting. So Microsoft is buying GitHub. Apparently, it came out after the announcement that they were also talking to Google about an acquisition. As in the past, they've talked to other companies as well about an acquisition, including like Atlassian, which does Bitbucket, which does Jira.
Jira, yeah, a bunch of tools.
A ton of dev tools. The way it's going to be going forward is that GitHub is going to be left to run on its own and its own entity, kind of like what you said, like a little bit with Hyperfish, but it's going to be left alone to run on its own and kind of like LinkedIn, the Microsoft LinkedIn acquisition is doing. This is an all stock. Oh, sorry, let me come back to that in a second. Nat Friedman, who's one of the founders and was the CEO of GitHub, is going to be...
No, he's the CEO of... Nat Friedman is the ex-CEO of Xamarin, who's taking over from Chris Wainsrath, who's the CEO and founder of GitHub. Other way around.
Got it. Yep. Okay, yeah, I mixed up. So Chris, the CEO of GitHub, is dropping the CEO role, and he's going to be a technical fellow at Microsoft. So...
He's resting, investing.
Yes. So, and the other part that's going on is that Nat Friedman, who used to be, he was the guy behind the CEO of Xamarin, who is a corporate VP for developer services for Microsoft, GitHub is going to be under his purview now. So, personally, I like that because I can understand if Chris, the former CEO of GitHub or the CEO of GitHub, I can understand if he's a dev at heart. And the CEO stuff can be the management stuff. He going back to his roots and being a technical fellow and focusing on tech stuff.
He announced he didn't want to be the CEO like a year ago.
Yeah.
Something like that. He was keen to get out of that role.
Yeah. So he's going to go back to that role. And the nice thing about it is that the person that is effectively going to be overseeing GitHub is someone who is from the open source, the open world community, was not a native Microsoft guy, but has a good solid year plus as Microsoft corporate management. So he's got the best of both worlds. It's the right person to really be taking over and to be leading GitHub going forward. The other thing that's interesting about this deal, it was a 100% stock deal, $7.5 billion stock deal. Microsoft stock has been an absolute tear over the last year. And so it could mean there's lots of reasons on why you could look at why they did this. And it came soon after the news that Microsoft was eclipsed Google on the market cap. So as far as the stock goes, what we saw out of this was immediately we saw a bunch of people in the open source world really start to poo-poo this deal and say, I'm getting out of here. And you saw a spike in projects being imported and stuff over GitLab. Hey, before we all flip out on that, I'd like to kind of see how that goes going forward, because I've imported my projects from GitHub over to VSTS and I didn't move some of them over. So just the import side could just be this trigger people to go kick the tires and other solutions. But let's see where it goes. I think it's a good deal. I think it's a good deal overall. I do have the first reaction when I saw it was I kind of took a step back and I was like, oh God, Microsoft, please don't this up. I hope this is going to be like the LinkedIn organization so far and not like the Skype acquisition.
Me too. I think it's so important that they don't screw it up. And it's an opportunity to not, right? Like it's theirs to lose, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously I really hope they don't screw it up. I don't think they will, especially with the indications they're giving from Satya and also putting Nat as the CEO. He fundamentally understands developers, right? He's been in this space in the open source world as well for a really long time. Like he worked at Novell for a long time, worked on the whole Mono project, the .NET running on other stuff project. That's where that came from. Anyway, he's super involved in that sort of stuff and he gets it. So it is Microsoft to screw up, but they're pushing, showing the right things. And honestly, they will have to prove themselves, like absolutely. But the people that are freaking out and running for the hills, they're the same people that say they're going to use like LibreOffice and that it's the year of Linux on the desktop, right? Yeah. It's like, there's a lot of noise, but whether there's any action is a different kettle of fish, in my view.
Yeah, it's good. What'll be, I hope at an absolute minimum, It just sits as its own thing. As we see LinkedIn right now, it just happens to be owned and run by Microsoft, but it still is its own thing. Now, I know LinkedIn, they've talked about doing other stuff in the future, but as it is today, yeah. it still doesn't feel like a Microsoft company. It's just happened. If you never saw the announcement they were bought by Microsoft, you wouldn't know that they were a Microsoft company.
Yeah. I saw one point on the internet that was like, wow, this is great. Now Microsoft can sniff and snoop on my code these other companies' code. And I'm like, come on, seriously? Like, Microsoft already run Office 365 for a phenomenal number of companies. And some of those are competitors,
yep.
could be considered competitors in areas. Do you think Microsoft sits there and sniffs on their inbox? I know for a fact they don't, right? Well, so if they were that sort of company, they would already have access to people's email and be snooping on all those corporate secrets flowing between CEOs and CFOs of public companies in Office 365. And from what I saw at Microsoft, I never saw even a thought of anything like that, right? So
it would be the death knell.
Exactly. It would be the end of it.
It would be the death knell of the company. Seriously, if you think looking at code, I get it. That's IP. You don't want that to get out there. But data is more, data arguably.
It's corporate espionage, right? It's like.
It is illegal. It's illegal. And with they've been running a public cloud with so much code that's already been deployed up there. They've been running a public a directory service for enterprises for a very long time. So they've already got your passwords. They don't have a way to go through and look at your passwords, but if they wanted to, they could have set that up a long time ago. They don't do that. They don't look at the data that's inside of Office 365, inside of OneDrive. They don't look at Skype communications. I mean, and if they do, if that news ever comes out, bye-bye. They're out. They're done. They're completely done.
Even if you log a support ticket and it requires Microsoft to ask you to look at your data, there is a prescribed process for doing that. And there's like, I think it's something or other about a lockbox or something along those lines. Anyway, there's a prescribed way that it's done with the customer's consent and only for a certain period of time. And all there's a bunch of constraints around things like that, but it's all in the customer's control. And so to think that Microsoft's going to go snooping on your code is just absurd.
Case in point, the support case. I had to open a support case a couple of weeks ago because my wife, all of a sudden, her mailbox, which is in my Office 365 tenant, could no longer send a Gmail because Office 365 and Gmail thought that she was a spammer.
Gotcha.
Now, the reason why they thought that, we won't get into that. But I had to open up a support case. The only way we were able to resolve it, the support technician, the guy that was running the case, he couldn't see anything inside my tenant. I had to do a screen share effectively with him. And then he had to point to things and I went through and I did it, but he was telling me what to go through and do and what to investigate and copy this and put it in the chat because I can't do it. I looked at it like, oh, that's great. Whereas meanwhile, the service that I use for sending out emails to my customers at Voitanos, I opened a support case on something. And the next thing I know, they go, yeah, we looked at this, this, and this, and we created this broadcast for you. Here's how you actually go about doing it. I'm like, you're in my account playing with my stuff. I'm like, wow. Yeah.
It's different. Yeah. It's different, different kind of way of going about it.
Yeah.
So I don't share those concerns at all. I know that of all of the big companies, I think Microsoft's ethics are the least in question.
I agree.
Between Google and Facebook and companies of that sort of magnitude, Microsoft's ethics now, historically, they've been in question, right? For sure. Yeah. But recent track record over the last sort of 3 to 5 years, I suppose, have been the least in question, for sure.
Here's how I explain it to someone. Aside from the whole snooping on your data thing, which I think is absolutely absurd. Microsoft has earned, in their history, they have earned people questioning them, their true commitment to open source. They have earned their question to not to this being a dubious move. They've absolutely earned that. Right? They've done things in the past that they've earned it. I think in the last few years, since Satya has taken over, I think that they've shown a completely different direction. But proof is in the pudding and is in their actions. Let's see where they go with this. So far, since Satya's taken over, totally different company. We'll see where they go.
Yep, let them prove themselves.
All right, you want to go move on to some other news?
Yeah, okay.
All right, I can do a fire hose on a couple things here, and then you jump in on a couple. How's that sound? Yeah,
sounds good.
All right, so we got all these are going to be links in our show notes. So go check the site for this, or if you subscribe to our email list, we always send those out as well. From the Azure blog, enhancements and application insights, profile and snapshot debugger. This came out at Build. You can do things like enabling the snapshot debugger without having to redeploy your web app, and to enable it in just one step, where before you had to, when you wanted to actually do snapshot debugging, you had to rebuild your project redeploy it to have extra stuff put in. Now you don't end up having to do that, especially for ASP.NET Core apps. There's also an on-demand profiler where you can trigger it anytime as needed. Otherwise, it would only run randomly about 5% of the time, which could miss capturing critical issues. And then it also will run. You can also use the profiler on ASP.NET Core running inside of Linux as well. So some of the new stuff that we've got there, and I will include that link inside of our show notes.
Nice.
And then another thing, kind of going along the whole profiling and monitoring thing, Microsoft announced, well, talk about going back in April, a new way to purchase Azure monitoring services. So you've got a way to do it. You can do pay-as-you-go pricing. You can do a consistent per gigabyte metering for data ingestion, and you can choose different pricing models. If you're an existing customer, you can actually jump between these new different pricing models if you don't like the model that you're presently on.
Nice.
Other little bit here too, there's two more things that I do want to highlight. One is that Service Fabric has gone open source. That's way old. That's March news. I've been sitting on for a while. So go read the old news from that one. And then this is one that I've been waiting for quite a bit. It's still in preview. It's not released yet, but they're still working on it. Is an NPM package, as well as something that you can get through if you're on like Mac OS, you can get it through Homebrew. But Azure Functions Core Tools, and that's going to allow you to run Azure Functions locally on your machine, whereas before it only did that inside of Windows. Now we have a cross-platform way of being able to run Azure Functions locally,
so you can have
true testing if you're leveraging Azure Functions.
Huh, that'd be nice for Mac devs, I guess.
Absolutely.
I got one here. Back in 2016, in fact, we talked about this, which was this Project Natick. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Mm. Anyway, Microsoft is sinking a data center off the coast of Scotland. Back in 2016, they did a prototype of this off the coast of California. But this week, they sank a new one, or maybe sinking is the wrong word. I don't know. Deployed a data center. Submersed. There you go. Submersed a new model of this, 117 feet below the surface of the sea, near off the coast of Scotland, I should say. It's pretty big. It's got 864 servers in it. So it's not an Azure data center in a box, but it's, you could imagine a number of these things being deployed simultaneously to sort of get more scale, obviously. And it requires a tether, obviously, to the shore for power and data. But yeah, you know, some of the benefits are obviously cooling, right? The ocean is typically pretty chilly. And so having an abundance of cold water to cool things is pretty good. So they're doing it. This is another test. This is not, I don't believe you're going to be able to deploy stuff in Azure on this thing. Wouldn't that be sweet though, if it turned up as a region to be like, where do you want to deploy your DSV2 virtual machine? Would you like it in US West, US East, or the ocean? That'd be pretty cool. They should definitely do that just for publicity. That'd be awesome.
I don't know. I thought that this is where all the GitHub open source projects were going to go. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, the bad.
I do not feel that way. I just thought that softball came right over the plate. I had to swing.
Nice. Maybe they'll put a bunch of GPU workloads in here and it's cheaper to cool or something. I don't know.
Hey, yeah.
But it'd be pretty awesome if they did do the publicity, like being able to deploy to this as a region would be so cool. Just to say, my app is running like 117 feet underwater would be awesome.
You can have like shark redundancy instead of geo redundancy. You can have like shark redundancy or killer octopus redundancy.
Yeah. Anyway, it's hooked up to a wind turbine for its power or a turbine.
A wave turbine?
No, wind. It's onshore. There's a wind farm that powers it, apparently. Yeah. How cool is that though? And it's run by their special projects research group or something. So it's a bit, you know, it's a research project. It's not for reals just yet.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I have...
When they get one in space, because space is quite cold from time to time, depending if you're in the light or not. But yeah, wouldn't that be cool? Yeah. Put up a Falcon 9 full of servers. Now we're talking. Come on, Elon. Satya. Pony up, buddy.
It's just got to sit on the dark side of the moon.
What region is that in? Orbit. That'd be pretty... Mention the region name for that. That'd be pretty cool.
Elon would come up with something. You saw the name, you and I were talking about this last night. Elon had a quarterly press call
last night,
and they preview announced that they would be announcing a new model car in March of 2019. And it's the Model Y. So their fleet is the Model S, the Model 3, which was supposed to be the Model E, but Ford was threatened to sue them and said, you can't do the Model E. So they said, okay, we'll be the Model 3, which is really just an E backwards. And then the Model X and the Model Y. So write those down, you guys. S3XY. It's a sexy fleet.
That's really cool. I like just these little things like that.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do two more fire bits of news here, and then we can go on to our picks here.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want, without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Two more bits of fire news here. I've got one from, not fire news, I guess quick news, from the
quick
Google.
Fire.
Quick fire news, there we go. Two news from Google around the Google Cloud platform. So the first one is that Google Cloud Division wins some business from Twitter. This was from early May, and it said Twitter was tapping some of Google for the social media services, data storage, and computing needs, where they're moving their stuff over to the Google Cloud platform. So that's a nice big win for the Google Cloud platform. Another one that is at the expense of another cloud is that Netflix, who has been long known to be AWS customers, they are testing the waters in the Google Cloud. And when you read the article on this, this article is from the middle of April. When you read the article on this, it sounds very much like they're not too happy with the machine learning and AI stuff that AWS provides. They were impressed with it on the Google Cloud platform side. And so it's kind of like the way to get GCP to get their foot in the door on Netflix. And who knows if that's going to be like a waterfall the dam's going to open and Netflix is going to switch. What's surprising about this to me, and I guess I wouldn't be surprised, is if Microsoft isn't rushing in to try and say, like, check out some of our AI and ML stuff. Because, I mean, Netflix, if I'm not mistaken, the majority of Netflix is run on Windows VMs inside
of it. All the front end stuff, I think, is, the AI stuff's very surprising. That's really interesting, I should say. Not surprising. Interesting. But if I was Satya right now, I would be doing everything in my power to win Netflix over.
Mm-hmm.
They need a win like Netflix to make waves with non-enterprise, potential non-enterprise Azure customers. There you go.
It would be definitely a huge shining star for Microsoft to have that.
And it would be a sweet middle finger to AWS as well, let's just say.
Boy, AWS and GCP, I mean, that's a, talk about like stealing that one from out from under them.
Yep, that'd be pretty awesome. Yep. Yeah. Speaking of AWS, they've beaten Microsoft to the punch with a new managed Kubernetes service. So they've announced a thing called the Amazon Elastic Container Service for Kubernetes, or Amazon EKS, and they've announced that it's generally available. So you can deploy Kubernetes workloads in Amazon and not have to do it with IaaS-type stuff. You can do it with their managed Kubernetes offering. What's interesting about this is Microsoft are very, very, very close to GA-ing their Azure Kubernetes service. It's in preview right now. You can go check it out and use it. I'm playing with it and using it for certain things, but it's not GA yet. And I suspect Amazon got whiff of what was going on from build with AKS and decided we want to try and beat Microsoft to the punch. Mm-hmm. And so they've gone GA. It's available in the US East area, US West area at this stage. I imagine it'll be going to other places in due course.
I wonder if they wanted to call it AKS, but they couldn't because Azure containers, Azure Kubernetes Service, not AWS Container Service.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, kind of interesting watching everybody battle for managed Kubernetes services.
You know, I saw something on Hacker News this morning. Kubernetes is only 4 years old.
Yeah, that's wild. You can sort of tell too with some of the tooling is pretty like piss poor.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of community support, but you know, when you come from the Microsoft world, you expect a level of tooling that the rest of the world doesn't.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
Want to pick your nose?
Sure.
How about some picks?
Let's do it.
How about you go first? Give me one of yours.
Okay, I got two picks. The first one is an article called Unleashing the Lunar Module. So I can't remember what I was doing. I was looking at something like a piece of YouTube footage or something like that with them extracting the Lunar Module from a Saturn V stack, you know, while it's in orbit, right? So from the third stage. And I was like, I don't understand how they secured the Lunar Module into the Saturn V third stage, right? And so I wanted to find out how, like, is it like Velcro or is it like a set of bolts or is it some sort of latches and like how do those get triggered? And goodness knows why. I don't know why I wanted to know this, but it's always kind of perplexed me about how this happens. Anyway, so it turns out there's this article written specifically about how the Lunar Module is attached, where it's in the stack, how it's communicated with, what happens before liftoff, how it happens during the command and service module separation, you know, when the command and service module detaches and turns around and then attaches to the Lunar Module and pulls it out of the third stage of Saturn. Goes into all of that, even the buttons that are involved inside the command module. And then it talks about like the docking and pressurization and the latching and all of that sort of stuff and how it all happens. But then the key piece to me was the separation of the Lunar Module, how it detaches from the third stage. And it's fascinating. Turns out there's a set of bolts. the Lunar Module is securely bolted in four places inside the base of the third stage, effectively, resting on its shoulders above the legs, known as outriggers. So you know how the legs sort of poke out the sides?
Yeah.
They're folded up inside before they unfold the legs. And on kind of the elbows of those legs, there's these little attach points for bolts. And so those are the spots where it rests on the outside edges of the third stage of Saturn, and there's explosive bolts that fire and then little springs that push it away. So the command and service module comes in, it docks with it, the bolts fire, and that lets it go from the third stage, and then the command and service module will use its maneuvering thrusters to pull it out of the third stage.
This is really cool.
If you wanted to know exactly how it was attached, this article goes into it, including schematics of the little mechanism that attaches it to the third stage. It's perplexed me for ages. I don't know why I cared to know this, but it was one of the things I really didn't have any clue about how they did it. Anyway, Unleashing the Lunar Module is a great read. That's my first pick.
This site that you linked to for this called spaceflightblunders.wordpress.com.
Yeah.
You just created a complete time sink on me now. Yeah. I was looking at the article and I pocketed it to read it later, but now I'm going through and how Eileen Collins' first command might have been her last, and talking about how with one of the space shuttle launches, how something like an engine almost exploded on liftoff.
Amazing.
Like one of the three mains.
Yep.
Wow.
There's a lot of good stories in here.
Yeah. Oh, great. Thanks, CJ.
Yeah, kiss your weak goodbye, buddy.
I got a lot of crap I got to get done. Oh, anyway. All right, cool. Very cool pick. Very cool pick. You ever played SimCity?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're a developer and you haven't done that,
you're not a developer.
Yeah, you're not a developer.
Let's be frank.
Vincent Oscala, a 22-year-old architectural student from the Philippines, spent years decoding the formula for success in SimCity 3000. And he has created a perfect, now this article is from 2010, but he created a perfect city. In SimCity terms, it's a masterpiece. And when you look at it, like down at street level, it looks like an absolute horrifying dystopia, right?
It looks like Shanghai.
It does. I didn't say that.
From the air, I mean.
When you zoom in though, when you start looking at the stats, zero crime, 10 pollution, 10 unemployment, land value high, approval rating high, health at 50%, education at 100, city size 9.1 million people. The population life expectancy is about 50 years, but the workforce life expectancy is also at 50 years. It's like the perfect city this guy made. It looks like crap because it's just everything's so stacked up on top of the map. But
yeah, I'm going to ask the tough questions.
Yeah.
Does he put his power plants in the corners?
No. Yeah, he did. he actually put a lot of the entertainment stuff in the corner.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a graph. There's some graph paper on here where you can see where he graphed out the whole thing. Here's how you make it perfect. It's pretty cool.
That's crazy. I'm going to have to look at that.
There's a YouTube video that actually walks you through it too.
Wow. All right. I've got another one. Speaking of really important stuff you've always wanted to know, did Han Solo use a trick of Einstein's relativity to make the Kessel run? So... You know, there's those things in life where you're like, this is completely pointless, but it's really fascinating. This is important. One of those things.
Yep.
This is basically describing, you know, there may be a couple of spoilers here. If you haven't seen the new Star Wars movie, Solo, I don't think I'm spoiling anything. Anyway, they make the Kessel run.
And, you didn't spoil anything.
They make the Kessel run. I think if you're a Star Wars nerd, you kind of knew this anyway because they were, you know, bragging about the Falcon doing this Kessel run fastest and all that. Anyway, turns out parsecs are a measure of distance, not time, right? And so you're like, well, how can you do a run in less distance, right? And so this article goes about trying to explain how you can go from point A to point B in a shorter distance using Einstein's theory of relativity and all this sort of stuff. They try to explain this sort of how you can do the Kessel run in a shorter distance.
That's pretty cool.
Rather than a shorter time necessarily, right? Which is kind of curious.
That is very curious.
Anyway, there's math and there's diagrams and stuff like that.
I'm just going to, you know what? I love our picks. The crap that you find interesting, I always find interesting too. I'm like, this is so, except, yeah.
I wonder if there's people that listen to this like, you guys are insane. This is mental. Who the hell cares? You know, I hope somebody does.
You can totally see what we geek out on, man.
Yeah. All right. What else you got for us?
I'm going back to space. You know who Robert Zubrin is?
No, I don't think so.
Dr. Robert Zubrin is an American aerospace engineer and author best known for his advocacy of the manned exploration of Mars. He wrote the book, The Case for Mars. He's done How to Live on Mars. He was one of the consultants, I think, on the book, The Martian.
Hmm.
I've got a link to a YouTube video where he did a Q&A and someone asked him, why should we go to Mars? What's the reason that we should actually go to it? And he gave an absolutely brilliant answer. The video is about four and a half minutes long.
Hmm.
It's absolutely awesome. You would love it. And he makes a lot of really, really good points. And you could just see that he almost has this like irritation to him that going, how is this not more obvious to everybody?
Yeah. Why is this not obvious? Yeah.
It's a great little clip. So if you're into that stuff, go check it out.
I will definitely look at that. That sounds really interesting.
Jam-packed show today, man. It's good to get back together.
Yes, it's nice to be face-to-face and recording more of a normal show than we've had in a little while. Hey, we've got some good ones coming up too. We're interviewing Jeffrey Snover shortly, who invented PowerShell, mm-hmm. amongst other things, and is working on Azure Stack and things now. So that's sure to be a fascinating episode. I'm sure people here are familiar with PowerShell. And probably Azure Stack, we've spoken about it on the show a little bit, so we've got an interview with him lined up real soon. Yeah, so stay tuned for a bunch of more cool stuff coming up over the next few weeks.
And we actually have another interview that you did too from Build around Visual Studio Team Services that we'll have that one coming out too in the coming weeks as well. So
yeah, so interesting on that one, guy on the show, Edward Thompson, used to work at GitHub, now works on VSTS specifically around source control stuff, and now is probably working back at GitHub.
But for the same company.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I messaged him and I was like, man, if you knew this was coming, You stayed really tight-lipped about it. Nice job. It was good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's we get interesting couple of months. I mean, of course, and you and I get to figure out some scheduling challenges with both of us traveling and family
running
stuff
around. Yeah.
The next 2 months are going to be challenging for us, but we'll get it done.
I got a trip, a vacation, not a work one, to New Zealand coming up in July, late July. So be off for a couple of weeks. So we will figure it out though. I may be recording a podcast with you from the beaches of Fiji at some point.
We'll see. There you go.
I'm not sure I get tubes from there, but we'll see.
It won't be as glamorous, but I may be recording one from the beaches of North Carolina.
Maybe we should do a beach episode.
I live at the beach. Okay, sounds good to me.
Excellent.
Awesome. All right, good talking to you again, man.
Cheers.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.